if I said everybody needs to take chemotherapy for the cancer they might get, okay?
Yeah.
That's exactly what is happening. We are being told to take a treatment. This is not a prophylactic. This is not helping us. We're being told to take a treatment for a disease we don't have and most likely will not have. And we're being told that using the careful marketing manipulation and propaganda, calling these things vaccines for public health. mRNA is a gene therapy. It's not a vaccination. It's a gene therapy that was originally developed for cancer treatment. That's why I'm using the chemotherapy analogy. This is not a vaccination.
From the Weston A. Price Foundation, welcome to the Wise Traditions Podcast for wise traditions in food, farming, and the healing arts. We are your source for scientific knowledge and traditional wisdom to help you achieve optimal health.
Hey, Hilda here. I have friends who've gotten one of the new COVID-19 vaccines, and you probably do too. These are the fastest developed vaccines in all of our medical history, and many people are lining up to get them as soon as possible. But what are they made of? What will they do to us? Why are they being promoted and by whom? This is episode 292, and our guest today is Dr. David Martin. David received his undergrad degree from Goshen College, his Master's of Science from Ball State University, and his doctorate from the University of Virginia. He is an innovator, a professor, and a man with experience in the medical field. Today, with David, we focus on the new mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. He goes over the major issues surrounding them. He reviews the mRNA technology and explains how it is actually gene therapy, not a vaccine in our usual understanding of the word. He reviews the problems with the PCR test and even helps us understand our broader state of emergency. Finally, he explains how fear, on a subconscious level, can make us resist truth. Before we dive into the conversation, I want to ask, what are you waiting for? Join the family and become a member of the Weston A. Price Foundation. We've got a special price for podcast listeners, only $30 per year. And I know gym memberships that cost more than that per month. So go to westonaprice.org and click on the Member Yet button. Use the code POD10 and join us for only $30. And thank you. Hey, and go to our website also, westonaprice.org, and get on our email list so you can find out about in-person gatherings. We want to stay connected with you. Just order our free info pack and you'll get on the email list automatically. We hope to see you soon. This is Holistic Hilda and you're listening to Wise Traditions. Welcome to Wise Traditions, David.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
David, I have a friend that works in the school system and she just got a letter suggesting that she's an essential worker and that she needs to get this vaccine, one of these new vaccines being developed against this COVID virus. What should she know before she goes for it, if she goes for it?
Well, let's start with your opening sentence. None of the words in the order that you use them actually exist in reality. So let's unpack that.
Okay.
First of all, there is no vaccine that is in development or contemplated that actually is a vaccine against the SARS-CoV-2 virus. That doesn't exist. That hasn't been developed. And it isn't even at this point in time in contemplation. And that's one of the unfortunate things about what's going on in the propaganda war right now, which is that in February, the World Health Organization made it abundantly clear that SARS-CoV-2, or the virus, and COVID-19, which is actually a series of clinical presentations of illness, were two distinct things.
You're making an interesting distinction. I have heard that SARS-CoV-2 is, quote unquote, the virus, and that COVID-19 is the disease. Is that what you're saying?
Well, COVID-19 is not a disease. COVID-19 is a series of clinical symptoms. It is a giant umbrella of things associated with what used to be associated with influenza and with other febrile diseases. But the problem that we have is that in February, the World Health Organization was very clear on stating that there should not be a conflation between the two of these things. One is a virus in their definition, and one is a set of clinical symptoms. And the illusion in February was that SARS-CoV-2 caused COVID-19. The problem with that definition and the problem with the expectation is that the majority of people who test positive using the RT-PCR method for testing for fragments of what is associated with SARS-CoV-2 actually are not ill at all. So the illusion that the virus causes a disease fell apart. That's the reason why they invented the term asymptomatic carrier.
Yes, hold up. So I'm wrapping my head around what you're saying. In other words, I might get a positive result from this PCR test, and the reason I'm not just asymptomatic, what's happening is I'm actually not sick at all. They've made a false assumption that SARS-CoV-2 causes COVID-19.
Yeah, and that's never been the case. It never has been the case. It never will be the case. There is a causal statement that is made in the media where, for example, Johns Hopkins or the COVID tracker platform or any of these things has intentionally misled the people. There are not 5,000 new cases in Virginia. There potentially may be several thousand positive PCR tests. But most of the people who have a positive test will never have a single symptom. And most of the people who have the symptoms do not have positive tests.
I know some individuals recently who said that very thing. They were like, I was really feeling sick and I got a negative test. And my sister-in-law, who was feeling great, got a positive test.
Yep. And that will always be the case. The causal link that the media has made and the causal link that the CDC has made, and the causative link that the COVID tracker, which is the collaboration between the Bloomberg Foundation, the Gates Foundation, Zuckerberg Foundation, and others, the official numbers that we get traped across the screens every morning of our computers and our televisions, those numbers are willfully lying. And they have been willfully lying since the inception of this. There is not a causal link between these things. That has never been established. It has never even been close to established. So we have a situation where the illusion of the problem is that people say, well, I don't want to get COVID-19. And what they mean is they don't want to get infected with a virus. And the problem is those two things are not related to each other. A viral infection hasn't actually been documented in the majority of what is called cases. And there is no basis for that conflation other than the manipulation of the public. And that's the first half of the problem. But the second half of the problem is that what is being touted as a vaccination, which, as you very well know, when somebody says the word vaccination, the public understanding is that you are being treated with an attenuated or a live virus or a fragment of an attenuated or live virus, and that the treatment is meant to keep you from getting an infection, and it is meant to keep you from transmitting the infection. That's what a vaccine, in the common definition of vaccine, is meant to do. The problem is that in the case of Moderna and in the case of Pfizer, this is not a vaccine. This is a gene therapy. It's a chemotherapy agent that is a gene therapy. It is not a vaccine. What this is doing is it's actually sending a strand of synthetic RNA into the human being and is invoking within the human being the creation of the S1 spike protein, which is a pathogen. It's a toxin inside of the human being. So this is not only not keeping you from getting sick, it's making your body produce the thing that makes you sick.
Well, in that sense, it does sound like a vaccine.
No, not at all. Because a vaccine is supposed to trigger immunity. It's not supposed to trigger you making a toxin.
Oh, right. That's how this differs.
It's not somewhat different. It's not the same at all. This is a public manipulation of a misrepresentation of a clinical treatment. It's not a vaccination. It's not a prohibiting infection. It's not a prohibiting transmission device. It's actually a means by which your body is conscripted to make the toxin that then allegedly your body somehow gets used to dealing with. But unlike a vaccine, which is to trigger the immune response, this is actually to trigger the creation of the toxin.
Yes, the way I've heard the companies put it is this is to teach your body to fight this virus when it comes around. So that's how they're presenting it, right?
Well, but their clinical trial didn't include any of that as even a possibility within the clinical trial. The clinical trial did not measure the presence or absence of a virus or a virus fragment. The clinical trial did not measure the possibility of transmission suppression. The clinical trial didn't measure any of those things. So this is a case of misrepresentation of a technology, and it's done exclusively so that they can get themselves under the umbrella of public health laws that exploit vaccination.
Yeah, I'm letting that sink in for a minute, because what you're saying is very different from what most of us have heard in the mainstream news and even from the press releases from these companies.
And no, but that's because people aren't reading the actual clinical trials. If you read the clinical trials, nothing that I'm saying is even remotely different. As a matter of fact, the companies themselves have actually said what I'm saying. They said they could not test for the existence or absence of the virus, and they could not test for the transmissivity because they said it would be impractical. So the companies themselves have admitted to every single thing I'm saying. But they are using the public manipulation of the word vaccine to actually co-opt the public into believing they're getting a thing which they are not getting. This is not going to stop you from getting coronavirus. It's not going to stop you from getting sick. In fact, to the contrary, it will make you sick far more often than the virus itself.
Now, how can you say that so definitively, David?
Because the data is nothing but that. 80% of people receiving, by the time they got the second shot, 80% of people had one or more clinical presentations of COVID-19. 80% of people who have an infection, according to RT-PCR, have no symptoms at all.
So people are getting it more from the vaccine, quote unquote.
Yes, you will get COVID-19 symptoms from getting the gene therapy passed off as a vaccine. You will get COVID symptoms from that 80% of the time. And if you're exposed to SARS-CoV-2, according to RT-PCR, 80% of the time, you will have no symptoms at all.
So what is the purpose of getting this vaccine or this gene manipulation, as you call it?
Well, it's a gene therapy technology. That's Moderna's own definition. So let's stick with what they say they are. This is a gene therapy technology, and the benefit is non-existent. A human being is going to be potentially exposed to unclassified, both short-term and long-term risks of altering their RNA and DNA from exposure to this gene therapy, and there is no... And this is very important to understand. There is no clinical benefit except that in certain instances of COV infection and or COVID-19 exposure, there were a few, and by that I mean less than a few hundred out of clearly nearly 40,000 in the clinical trial, a few hundred people had a few days less severe symptoms with the gene therapy when compared to the other control group. But even in that comparison, if you actually look at the methodology that's in the published papers for the clinical trials, they play games with the data, because what they're doing is they're separating reactivity, meaning the way in which a person responds to being exposed to the gene therapy. They separate out adverse events from actual COVID symptoms. And the problem is that COVID symptoms include things like fever, include things like body ache, include things like muscle pain and muscle weakness and things like that. And so they got rid of a lot of what would have been considered to be COVID symptoms by calling them adverse events. if you actually pull that data out and you say, okay, just compare the population that got the gene therapy with the population that didn't get the gene therapy. The population that got the gene therapy had way, way more illness, including COVID-19 symptoms, than the population that didn't get the gene therapy. But because they classified an enormous number of things as adverse events, they essentially technically wiggled themselves into what was this ridiculous 90%+ effectiveness. But effectiveness was not effective in blocking illness. It was effective in allegedly shortening the duration of symptoms.
Right. And I think people are so afraid right now that they are ready to believe what they want to believe and holding on to that one bit of information that you just shared, that the likelihood is that just like with the flu vaccine, at least it will tamp down my symptoms and limit the duration of my illness. So they held on to that one bit of information that was actually data manipulation, as you're saying, and they are just holding out hope that this will be their saving grace to help them avoid COVID-19.
Nothing about this will avoid COVID-19, and nothing about this will avoid SARS-CoV-2.
But we've been talking mostly about the Moderna and Pfizer vaccine that are the gene therapy. Is there another one in the works or getting to the market that is not using gene therapy?
Well, so the AstraZeneca Oxford trial is using a viral fragment. So it is more along the technological lines of what you and I might consider historically to be a vaccine. And the AstraZeneca Oxford trial has in fact been kind of an interesting one to watch because they have a methodology problem that is actually quite challenging in terms of trying to pool data and really understand what's happening either on the safety or efficacy side. The reason is very simple, that in certain instances, the AstraZeneca Oxford trial has actually not used just a saline control group. They've actually used another vaccine as the control. In other words, they've stacked the deck. They're making it look like they are somehow neutral compared to another vaccination in several of their data collection efforts. And as a result of that, we have both a methodology problem, which, by the way, has been criticized by a number of clinical scientists, and the bigger problem is that they're still not measuring viral susceptibility and viral transmission. Those are the two legs of the stool that is required for anyone to actually say that they are vaccinating a population for public health reasons. There is no means by which, and this is a very simple thing to wrap your head around. If I said, everybody needs to take chemotherapy for the cancer they might get, right?
People would laugh in your face. They would.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's exactly what is happening. We are being told to take a treatment. This is not a prophylactic. This is not helping us. We are being told to take a treatment for a disease we don't have and most likely will not have. And we're being told that using the careful marketing manipulation and propaganda, calling these things vaccines for public health.
Well, and historically, vaccines, we've taken them for that very reason. I don't have the measles. I don't want to get the measles. So I'm going to get this measles shot. So we've been primed to accept that approach.
That's the narrative everybody expects.
Why don't you expect that, though? What's made you dive deep?
Because that's not what's being measured. That's not what's being done. And that's not what this technology is about. mRNA is a gene therapy. It's not a vaccination. It's a gene therapy that was originally developed for cancer treatment. That's why I'm using the chemotherapy analogy. This is not a vaccination.
Coming up, David explains how fear, on a subconscious level, can hold us back from believing and acting on facts on just about any topic. And he also offers insights on our current state of emergency.
You're listening to the Wise Traditions podcast from the Weston A. Price Foundation. We pause now to recognize our sponsors.
Toops & Co. Organics, they do things differently. Skincare products should nourish the skin without hormone-disrupting toxins and fragrances. Tubes & Co. Organics was started by a husband and wife team that realized that what we put on our body is just as important as what we put in it. All of Tubes & Co. Organic skincare products are made with wholesome, clean, and recognizable ingredients. Organic and fair trade ingredients, highest quality cold-pressed olive oil, tallow from grass-fed cows, certified organic-grade essential oils, and love. Basically, they only use what they would want for their own family. And their products work. Their kids' hair and skin glows and shines, and yours can too. Check out their products, skincare, makeup, deodorant, soaps, baby wash, balms, and more at tubesandco.com. That's tubes, T-O-U-P-S, and co.com. Use the coupon code WISETRADITIONS, all lowercase, one word, for 10% off your first order. Tubes & Co. Organics. They do things differently. This podcast is growing at an exponential rate, and we are so thankful. You are the one listening and sharing it. Help us get to the next level now by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. Just take 1 minute or two to do this, and it will help us reach even more folks with this health-saving information. Thank you so much in advance. This is Holistic Hilda, and you're listening to Wise Traditions. I have colleagues, I'm sure you do too, and friends and acquaintances who are going for it. What can we tell these people or share with them that might wake them up?
Well, that's a very complex issue. And I have chosen a long time ago to not engage in the energy of this kind of waking, sleeping metaphor, because the fact of the matter is, if people are conditioned to react to fear, this is reflexive and it's not conscious. If we examine our behavior, and what we do is we engage in self-harm because we are convinced that somehow or another there's a worse future ahead of us, that's something that I really don't have an ability to say facts are going to ever overcome. I have yet to meet, by the way, in my life, someone who allowed a fact to overwhelm a belief. Once you've adopted a belief, facts are not welcome, because what they do is they not only indict your belief, but they indict the energy that you hold that says, I have to believe what I'm told. And the minute you try to engage with facts, all you do is you trigger conflict. So what I do is I try to take the complex science and the complex reporting, and I try to make it accessible and easily understood. The goal being that in certain instances, people will go, man, I can't even believe that what he said was true. Well, the cool thing is you don't have to believe what I'm saying is true, because I don't value belief. I value the objective reality of facts. And it turns out that in this particular case, it is very simple and it's very straightforward to say to any person in Moderna's own SEC filings, they make it abundantly clear that their technology is a gene therapy technology. In their clinical trial, they've made it abundantly clear that they could not measure the presence or absence of the virus, and they could not measure the presence or the absence of the transmission of the virus. So every single thing that they represented to be doing that preys on the public understanding of what vaccination is, they explicitly said they're not doing that.
So you have been very careful to lay out the facts to me and to the listening audience, and we're so thankful. And now I just want to ask you on a more personal note, would you even take this PCR test if you had to for travel? I mean, I'm getting all kinds of emails and people reaching out to me saying, I think certain things, and I'm not even talking about the vaccine or the gene therapy technology right now, but certain things are being required just to participate in life.
Well, I'm actively involved with many of the significant pieces of litigation that are going on to try to unmask the conspiracy that is driving both the PCR as well as the medical countermeasure interventions. And so I'm at the vanguard with a few other souls who are actually fighting for the rights of citizens to actually make decisions informed by facts, not informed by propaganda. The fact of the matter is the PCR test has never been approved as a diagnostic. It is not a diagnostic. So there's nothing about taking a PCR test that does anything other than reinforce a propaganda narrative. It doesn't tell you anything. If you actually have clinical symptoms, the reason, by the way, why we're not doing influenza testing right now is because we don't want to admit the fact that the majority of people who are in hospital and the majority of people who are sick and the majority of people who are dying are actually experiencing exactly the same thing that's happened every year, which is influenza-like and flu-like and pneumonia-like illness that in many cases, when someone has immune compromise or other comorbidities, leads to fatalities. And it's a very sad reality that that in fact happens, but it is part of the human experience that it happens. And the fact is that a PCR test is not going to make or not make a confirmed diagnosis of anything because PCR tests cannot confirm a diagnosis.
Yeah, I've interviewed Dr. Tom Cowan and Dr. Andy Kaufman, and they say much the same thing. As a matter of fact, the person who came up with or developed the PCR test says that it's not to be used to diagnose anything.
Well, so does the FDA. So does everybody else. The only reason why we are currently using PCR tests is because governors and the Department of Health and Human Services are maintaining a state of emergency. The very second that that state of emergency is lifted in any state or in the country, the PCR test won't be allowed to be used. So it's funny. We're maintaining a state of emergency so that manufacturers can keep selling a thing that would never be approved if it was actually subject to a clinical trial.
Wow.
And by the way, that goes for what's being called vaccines too. I mean, the gene therapy that Moderna is doing, the gene therapy that Pfizer is doing, both of those would be suspended immediately if the state of emergency got lifted. And people don't understand that if you lift the state of emergency, the whole house of cards falls.
And that's something else that you and your team are advocating for.
Because the emergency use authorization falls with the state of emergency.
Right, right. And is this one reason, do you think, David, that they have kind of cast aspersions on hydroxychloroquine or any other protocols that could possibly treat these symptoms of SARS-CoV-2?
Oh, there's no question. If you look historically, for many years, Dr. Anthony Fauci at NIAID has held his annual advisory committee meeting. And every year he laments the fact that they're trying to build this universal vaccine. It's a universal influenza vaccine, which he refers to using as a infant imprint vaccine. And they've been trying to do this for years and it hasn't worked. This happens to be an opportunity for Anthony Fauci to get what he has not been able to get through legal means, which is he wants to get to a place where he forces a vaccine on a population. And so he's manipulating this current situation to force a vaccine on a population. But the fact of the matter is, he forgot that if he's going to force a vaccine on a population, it should at least be a vaccine.
But what would his motives be for that?
Well, it always has been financial. There's billions of dollars at stake. And NIAID is essentially the incubator for the pharmaceutical industry. And he's serving the paymasters that have let him manage $191 billion in his career at NIAID.
So there's lots to consider here. You've really given us a lot of food for thought. We'll definitely want to have another conversation with you again. But let's just say I'm an individual that was listening to all these facts and I've been persuaded I do not want to get this gene therapy technology. I don't want to even get the AstraZeneca vaccine. I don't want to get any of this, but I'm under pressure either because of my job or whatever it is for travel purposes to do so. What would you advise me to do?
Well, I can't advise a person at all. I mean, that's not my role. But what I can tell you is that this is a decision that any human being is going to ultimately have to make based on whether or not they choose to live or they choose to be enslaved. This is like any point in history where you have to make decisions that are based on what is moral and ethical and right with respect to your own sense of responsibility and accountability. And the fact of the matter is, like wearing a seatbelt, like doing a whole bunch of other things, your choice to engage in an activity is ultimately going to be a decision that you have to live with. I personally will not touch a thing. And I will not allow my body to be invaded with a thing that has actually both been developed in an unethical and illegal way. And I am not going to let anybody have the opportunity to manipulate my genetic code. It's just not going to happen. And the fact of the matter is, if that means that it comes at a cost of a particular employer or a particular relationship or whatever else, my life happens to be worth more than that. I mean, we've been conditioned to fall into this trap, which is, oh my gosh, we might be able not be able to get on a plane. Well, okay, so drive.
I've thought about that. I'm going to start taking boats. Yeah.
I'm not going to let my future and my well-being be enslaved to a commercial interest that is trying to extort or blackmail me into a thing.
Well, that does sound like living, and that does sound like freedom as opposed to slavery. I appreciate that. And I think that's what we're about to here at the foundation. We want people to live their best lives, to kind of take responsibility for their own health and look to ways to nurture it that may not be the most modern or the most profitable for current health companies, but will be best for them. So let me just wrap up by asking you the question I often pose at the end, David. If the listener could do one thing to improve or sustain their health, what would you recommend that they do?
Well, pick a lifestyle modification first and foremost, and pick it with someone else. Begin exercising, engage in a more wholesome way of engaging with the food you consume. Anything that involves bringing together this sense of well-being, which involves fellowship, nutrition, vitality, and really empowering you to become a person who not only has a conceptual idea of what health is, but actually has a lived experience of it. Because the more you have the lived experience of health, the less you can be told you're unwell when you're perfectly fine.
I love it. Thank you so much for your time, David. This has been a great conversation.
You're most welcome. Take care.
You too.
Our guest today was Dr. David Martin. Visit his website, davidmartin.world, for more info and resources. And I'm Hilda Labrador-Gore. Go to my website, holistichilda.com, for more on what I have to offer. And for the transcript for this podcast episode, visit our website, westonaprice.org, and click on the podcast page. And now for a recent review from Apple Podcasts. The Answer to All My Health Questions by Meg. I'm a new mom transitioning to a whole foods farm-to-table diet, and I find that in my quest for what's best for my family, this podcast has all the answers. I love how the principles are simple, but backed up by so much research and discussion I can trust. This podcast makes me encouraged to keep seeking what's best for my health and my family, and it gives me tools to do just that. Meg, thank you so much for your review. We really appreciate it. And you too can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts anytime. Help us to break that 1,000 review mark, that milestone. Thanks for listening. Stay well, my friend, and hasta pronto.
On behalf of the Weston A. Price Foundation, thanks for listening. We have many free resources to support you on your health journey. Visit westonaprice.org to find podcasts, articles, videos, and more. You can also find a local chapter near you for help in finding sources of great food. We invite you to support the Foundation's mission of education, research, and activism by becoming a member. Thanks again, and take care. Wise Traditions is a project of the Weston A. Price Foundation for Wise Traditions in Food, Farming, and the Healing Arts. The content on this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended to substitute for the advice provided by your doctor or other healthcare professional. It is not intended to be, nor does it constitute healthcare or medical advice.